If someone asked me how to get better at painting today, right now, I'd tell them this: limit your palette. And the reason? Personal experience. When I limited my palette, it changed everything. I went from being a painter who really stressed out about color mixing to becoming an artist where color is a huge source of my painting joy. And so if you'd like to learn more about what a limited palette is and how to get started with just 3 colors, I've made a special mini just for you. Getting started with a limited palette is seriously so easy and may be the breakthrough you've been waiting for. So head to learntopaintpodcast.com/3colors, that's the number 3, to grab the mini. That's learntopaintpodcast.com/3colors.
Everyone's journey is different. Everyone's path is different. And if we learn stuff in different orders, it just means we make something different. And that's great, because if we were all making the same thing, it'd be really boring.
Hello and welcome to the Learn to Paint podcast, the show that gives you artistic tools you can put to work. I'm your host, Kelly Ann Powers. Today, I'm talking with artist Emma Carlisle. In the conversation, you'll learn a great strategy for working up to larger pieces, ideas for getting comfortable on location, and how to use projects to keep yourself going. In the extended cut bonus, we talk trusting your gut, the power of working in your comfort zone, and why sometimes you really just need to keep that work private. You can find links to that extended cut bonus and to the Podcast Art Club, where you will find over 50 additional bonus cuts with guests at learntopaintpodcast.com/podcast/episode 96. I start the interview by asking Carlisle how she got started in art.
Always loved to draw. Always. My mum, actually, when I moved into this house, she gave me a box of drawings from when I was at school. It's really special. So I've got all these drawings of like bizarre stuff, but some stuff actually is really interesting, is stuff I'm still drawing now. I'm coming back to the same themes even when I was 5. I love drawing. Wasn't very good at anything else academically at school, so I went and did a national diploma in art and design, studied illustration at uni, followed that by a master's in children's book illustration. And then it's really been, I suppose, since 2018 that my creative practice is like taken over. I've always loved art, I've always wanted to do it, but it's only been really since 2018 that it's fulfilled me. I'm sort of making visuals with my hands of like a sphere, and I suppose I see it as quite a round, it feels very rounded now. Whereas before, my art journey was a bit like, oh, I'm not sure. And now I feel like, ah, I'm in the right space, I'm here. So yeah, that's a very brief overview.
Well, what's so interesting about that is that as someone who's maybe a self-taught beginner walks into a space and will see someone like you and think like, oh, well, she must have walked into this fully formed. But what I hear you saying is like, no, it was a journey and it took you a while to figure out who you were.
Yeah. And I think there's been different versions of me through it. I can look at work that I was making when I just graduated or when I was on my picture book MA. And there's elements of it. Again, there's always the same threads running through my work, but I've almost like you don't really know what to do with them sometimes. And then now it does just all feel like it's weaving together. But it can feel really scary. I remember because I restarted my creative practice in 2017, 2018, sort of wasn't happy with what I was making creatively. So I started again and I still have those sketchbooks. And sometimes you kind of think, oh, I haven't done that much in the last few years. And then you look at those original sketchbooks I started in 2017, 2018, and it's, whoa, there's been huge progression and development in that time.
You said you had a big shift in 2017, 2018. What were you working on before? And what made you realize that you needed to have a shift in what you were working on?
I'd graduated from my picture book MA and I was doing picture books. I had 2 picture books out when I graduated that I'd written and illustrated. And there was a shift in my work that became a bit more digital. So I was working on the computer quite a lot. And I was also making ceramics. I'd bought a kiln. I was doing picture books. I'd bought a kiln. I was making ceramics. I was running an Etsy shop. I was making like enamel pins. And it was fine. Looking back, like it was fine. Now I feel like pure joy when I'm working. And I don't think I ever felt that with that work. But I don't think you know that until you do feel that joy in your work. And then I had some mental health issues end of 2017. It really wiped me completely almost. I've spoken about it openly on other podcasts before, but the way I can describe it is that I just didn't know myself anymore. You could ask me like what my favorite film was or what music I liked or what food I liked, and I just didn't know. And I also just, I was at a real crossroads with the work. I could stop drawing completely because none of it was making me happy anymore. I didn't want to make ceramics. I didn't want to make these picture books. I didn't want to work digitally.
How did you figure out what you did like?
I kind of asked myself like, okay, well, when was the last time you were happy making work? And I thought, well, I really loved drawing on location in my sketchbook when I was studying on my picture book MA. I was like, okay, well, let's go do that then. Because it was either stop drawing and stop being creative at all, or it was doing that. And I was like, well, I'll do that. I'll try it. I'll try it for 6 weeks and see what happens. And that's sort of, that snowballed. So 6 weeks turned into 6 months. 6 months is, I mean, next year will be 6 years, I think. Yeah, really snowballed. But going back to sketchbooks saved my life. And again, I've spoken about it openly before, but going out, drawing a location and working in my sketchbook, it gave me something to do. And then all of a sudden I started understanding more about myself again. So I was almost this new, not a new person, but I was different. And that it makes sense now looking back. That's why the work had to be different, because I wasn't that same person anymore. I'd changed. My work changed. I'm so grateful. It was the hardest time of my life, but I'm so grateful now. Oh, it sounds horrible to say I'm so grateful that it happened, but I am, because it led me to here where I love making art. I love drawing. I love painting. I love teaching.
When you were making that transition, what about a project was helpful? Why a project?
I lectured for 7 years at Plymouth University, so I was an illustration lecturer, and I'd loved my time at uni. I loved studying illustration. Studied at Plymouth as well, and then I went on and studied at Cambridge on the children's book illustration course, and I loved the projects. I always felt quite safe having the boundaries of a project. So they would say like, go do this for X amount of time, or go work on this for X amount of time, or here's a theme, here's an idea, now you go develop it. And for me, that was the best. So they would give us something like a word that's no longer in use, like a forgotten word. And then for me, it was just so exciting because I got to stretch the idea of what that was as far as it could go. So I could really delve into that. And I used to love doing that. On the picture book MA that I studied on in Cambridge, the first project is a 6 week project where you purely just go draw on location. They made you pick a theme. So I did pick a theme for that one. I ended up veering off theme, but I ended up drawing in the giraffe house at London Zoo. And that was when I was sort of in my darkest moment. That was the sort of visual I could have, is me sat in this giraffe house. And it was about as much drawing the giraffes as it was drawing the people watching the giraffes and the building the giraffes were in. It was the whole thing for me. And that's the visual I had. So I was like, right, well, let's do another 6 week project. Let's give yourself a project.
How did you go about actually setting up that project?
So yeah, I didn't have a theme, but I didn't have a lot of money. I just would take my sketchbook that I already had, because I had sketchbooks left over from when I was just studying. I had pencils. So I used to take like very limited stuff. So maybe like one pencil and a sketchbook. And I would draw out my window, or I would draw near my house. I wouldn't go far. And I was really lucky that I lived at the time in Plymouth, and I lived really close to the coast path. I could walk to a little boat, and I could get a little boat across the Tame River. And then I could walk onto the coast path, and then I could walk and I could draw, and then I could walk home again. What an amazing thing. I mean, I don't do that now. No, my life is a lot of sat at my desk at the moment, working on books and paintings and artwork and sending emails and spreadsheets, editing videos. But it was such a special thing because I needed that healing, and the drawing gave me the thing to do. And then I was going outside, which was also really healing, and being in nature, which was also really healing. And now that nature side of things, again, is a huge part of my work. So at the time, I didn't see it feeding in, but it all sort of linked and fed in together.
So when you were first getting started, what did you bring with you? And how did you learn how to do it?
So I'd sort of go out with my sketchbook. And one of the things I did, which I don't do now, and I probably should, is that I just took really limited materials with me. And I actually found the pencil case I used to take out with me when I was moving house last year. And I opened it for my patrons. It was like a time capsule of just a graphite stick, one of those big chunky ones, a Painscrow pencil, a pencil sharpener, I didn't know anything really about drawing or painting. It was funny, I opened this pencil case and it's like six B pencils. Like I wasn't taking out any variety or any colour. I was just like, I like a 6B pencil and I will take like four or five of them and a big chunky graphite stick. And I slowly started introducing colour. So I didn't go out and take everything with me. I didn't have anything. Like, and I didn't have any money to buy the stuff. So I had one sketchbook and I had this small collection of stuff that I would take. And I think I learned how to use those materials and I learned how to sort of start to use the sketchbook page to build a composition. When I first started, I would often sit down and sort of say, I'm going to draw that tree or that house or that building. And then I would start drawing. I would start on the left and I would work my way across. And then the thing that I actually wanted to draw wouldn't even fit on the paper. And I would just end up with this like lovely drawing, but not what I wanted to draw. So I very quickly realized that to start composing a little bit, but also I didn't, I think now, if I wanted to learn something, I would go home and I would type it into YouTube, how to work better with tone or how to work better with colour, or I would listen to a podcast or I'd do that research. But I think I was so naive at the time. I just learned as I went. I didn't do any lessons. I didn't go and do a course or a workshop with anyone. I just would go out and I would think, okay, I'm going to draw and see what happens. And it wasn't for anything either. I was posting a little bit. I started tentatively posting stuff back on my Instagram, but really they weren't for social media. They weren't for a portfolio. I wasn't actively looking for more illustration work. I'd left my illustration agency. So it wasn't for anything. It was just for me. It actually blows my mind now that I didn't do that. Because now if I want to get better at something, I'll be like, right, YouTube. And then I'll watch like a series on how to use tone or how to draw trees better, or, you know, I'll watch something. But I just didn't do that. I would learn from each drawing. So I would be like, okay, that didn't work that time. Let's try this next time.
I imagine it can feel pretty vulnerable to be working out in public. So how did you deal with that part of it?
Really quickly, learn how to not interact with anyone, which sounds horrible. But when you're first starting out, it can feel so scary that people are going to come and look at your drawings and be like, what are you doing? I learned very quickly that if I slowly closed my sketchbook when someone was approaching, they would quite often not come and talk to me. So I would do this very slow close of my sketchbook. I'd wear headphones because people don't tend to bother you if you've got headphones in, like quite visible headphones. Now they're so small, people don't really know if you put them in or not. But I used to wear headphones and I used to position myself somewhere. I learned to sort of have a wander around the place I got to first. It wasn't sort of, I'd just sit down and draw. But I learned to kind of have a wander, find what I wanted to draw, find somewhere I could sit and have it so that if someone wanted to come see my drawings, they'd have to go out their way to see them. Because I always thought, well, then if it's not a good drawing and they come and look at it, that's down to them. That's not my fault. They're the ones who've come and to look at what I'm doing.
It feels like being in public as an artist could feel very vulnerable. Was there any parts of it that you sort of had to give yourself permission to do this thing in public?
Yes, because of where I was at emotionally at that time, I was very anxious and very self-conscious. So I can't believe I used to go out at least once a week and just sit with my sketchbook and draw, because I find that quite intimidating now. Like even now, I can find it quite nerve-wracking, especially if you've not done it for a while. I find that once you do it once, you're like, oh, that was fine. You can go out again and again and again. But at the time, because I'd given myself this project and because it was something for me to focus on, it got me out of the house. It got me out of bed. There was almost too much external stuff going on that actually going outside and drawing in my sketchbook felt like the least scary of it all. But now I do find it scary now doing it. I haven't been out for a while. So I challenged myself this January to go out and draw. And I challenged myself to stay close to where I live. So I challenged myself to draw like 30 paces from home. Realized very quickly that 30 paces, my paces aren't that big. So I got to the end of my garden. So I was like, okay, well, let's do within the radius of where I live. And I still felt very nervous. I made my boyfriend come out. He's also an illustrator and an artist. And I made him come out and draw the first time I went, because I thought, well, it won't feel so scary if someone else is with me. And then the next time I was like, I can do this. And then the next time I was like, I can do this. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, your question was more around like the permission to go do it. Yeah, it's a weird one because I think it depends on the day. Some days I feel really confident. I can go out and be like, yes, I'm going to make this work. Some days I just want to stay at my desk and draw. Some days I really need a push to go out and draw, like, and actually come back and think, ah, yeah, that was really good, actually.
When people come into art, we have this idea as beginners that we can get to a point where there is no fear. And what I hear you saying is like, no, that actually might not be true. But also, it's not that the fear has disappeared. It's that you now can see it and then build strategies to not let it stop you.
Yeah, definitely. I remember 5 years ago, whenever it was, thinking like, when I have done this, I'll have made it as an artist. When I have got workers in a gallery, I'll have made it as an artist. When I have can go out drawing on location without being scared, I'll have made it as an artist. When I have a book published, I'll have made it as an illustrator. When I've had work put into a book of sketchbooks, I'll have made it as an illustrator. And I hit all those milestones now. I still do not feel like I've made it as an artist or illustrator. And I think actually, the exciting bit for me always is the process and always is the journey, and it always has been. So even when I first started this new project or life, new life, it's always been about the process and the journey for me. It's never about that final thing. And I am working now. I have a creative consultant who I see every month, Elaine at Studio 1850. And I've been working with her to actually acknowledge these milestones that I'm hitting, because it can be really easy to brush them under the carpet and be like, no. There's still more. So I am trying hard to be like, those are big things that you've achieved and that's really good. But there's always something else. There's always the next thing. And I'm making some work now, just taking it off my desk. I can still feel myself, oh, is it right? Is it not right? I'm not sure. Should I try this? There's still that element. There's always an element of play in my work, but I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever really feel like that. And I'm okay with that. I've come to the, that's okay.
We're going to transition into materials. So first off, what sketchbooks do you use?
I like a Royal Talons Art Creation sketchbook for an A4, A5 size. And then if I'm going bigger, I like a Moleskin A3 artist sketchbook. And then last year, what I've started doing is cutting them down. So I've started taking a Stanley knife and a ruler and cutting the tops off them. So they've gone from like this quite boring format to like a square format. And it's because I was working in an A5 one so much. I loved them. I couldn't get enough. But I challenged myself last year to learn to work outside of a sketchbook, which I've never been able to do. And I challenged myself to work bigger. So my way of tricking my brain into doing that was taking the Royal Talons A4 sketchbook and cutting an inch off the top of it so that I was actually only going a little bit bigger. And then I did the same with the Moleskin sketchbook. So I cut and maybe 2 inches off the top of that. So then once I'd got used to the cut down A4 one, got used to the cut down A3 one, and then I went to paper. So it was baby steps to get bigger and outside my sketchbook. But yeah, I like the Royal Talons ones because they are so affordable that you can just cut the top off or make a mess in them. And it's okay because you can just turn the page, get a new sketchbook, whatever, like start again, cover them in ink, rip them. I mean, don't take your drawings out, but if you wanted to cut into them, you can. They're such an affordable sketchbook. They really open up what you can do with them.
When someone's first getting started, what makes a good sketchbook, but also what makes a bad sketchbook?
Ooh, that's like a really controversial question, because I know there's people who will be listening to this and they'll have their favorite sketchbook, or they'll have a sketchbook maybe that they're working in now. Maybe they're listening to this and working. And what I hate to do as a teacher, what I hate to do is say, your sketchbook that you're using is wrong or like isn't the right one. Any sketchbook will do. Any sketchbook, if you like it, it's the right sketchbook for you. I think that's really important, because I could quite easily jump in and say, I do not like a ring bound sketchbook, because I don't like that. If you have a sketchbook with a ring binder down the middle, it really limits what you can make in that space. Because if you wanted to then all of a sudden go over the middle, if you were making a drawing and then you did what I did, out on location, and you've missed the lighthouse that you're trying to draw, or the house that you're trying to draw, you can go over the page in a ring bound sketchbook, but it's kind of putting a boundary in there. I don't like that it could break a drawing, could break your flow, like the way you're making an image. But I'm very aware that if I say I don't like a ring bound sketchbook and it's someone's favorite sketchbook and they love it, They might feel funny. Art is so subjective. Our materials are so subjective that I would hate to discourage someone from continuing using their ring-bound sketchbook because it might be the best sketchbook for them. Because they might like that you can rip the pages out and then fold them into little books or concertinas or pin them up on the wall. That might be brilliant for them. But personally, I like a smooth surface, slightly off-white because it's a little bit less scary than white. And I like something that's really affordable. The Moleskine sketchbooks have gone up in price this year. So I get a lot of messages at the moment saying like, what's your favourite A3 sketchbook? Because the Moleskine sketchbooks have gone up in price and I'm still searching for that sort of dreamy, affordable A3 sketchbook. But I think it's whatever works best for you is the best sketchbook.
Is part of affordability the cost, but is also part of affordability is that you're not afraid to make a quote unquote mistake or ugly drawing in it?
Yeah, for me, 100%. Especially now, probably in the last 6 months, I've started buying more expensive paper because if I'd done that a year ago when I was like, right, I'm going to move now from my sketchbook to this really expensive piece of paper. Oh, I couldn't have done that. I would have made the worst drawing and then I would have been like, oh, great, that's £6 on a piece of paper. Like, I could have bought a sketchbook for that price. For me, art really is about play and tricking my brain. So play is the best bit for me. Like, I'm always playing in my process. And when I teach, play is a big part of that. But being able to trick my brain into making something and not caring too much is like really good. So I do spend a lot of money on art materials. I really like the Luminance pencils. They're expensive. I've got a desk full of Montana markers, which you can fill your own colors. They're expensive. When I was painting, I really liked golden paints. They're expensive. But I think I've definitely fallen into that trap, especially when you're starting, where you've bought something and then you've gone, oh, but that cost a lot of money. I better save it until I'm better, in air quotes. Or I'll save it until I'm going to make a final piece of artwork, or I'm going to save it until I'm ready. And I have to trick my brain into being like, I mean, luckily my memory is quite bad. I forget how much stuff costs until you go to reorder it and you go, oh my gosh, that was really expensive. But I like being able to trick my brain so that I can make those sort of drawings that don't go so well, because I'm just learning through drawing, learn. And if that takes 6 or 7 drawings in a sketchbook, that's okay.
Do you still have to trick your brain? Like, do you still run into this issue even now in your practice?
Yes. I went to a live drawing class the other day and it was a lying down pose, which I find so hard, so, so hard. And it was a 2-hour class for one pose. Normally I do one drawing in 2 hours and I like structure my drawings. So I do a bit of this, do a bit of that, do this, do that. And this, I just kept getting it wrong. And I did 7 drawings, but I'd bought cheaper paper with me. Don't normally do that, but that session I had done. So I just kept working on, I was like, I'll do a drawing, that's not worked, flip the paper over, work on the other side, try that. But if I'd taken my Arches paper with me, which is what I normally take with me, I think I would have felt really scared. This paper's expensive. Do I keep going? Do I keep working on it? I don't want to waste the paper, but it's not working. I don't like this drawing. So for me, it's a bit of both. Like, I think, especially when you're starting out, finding something that you're not too scared to use, you're not too scared to ruin. For me, it was really important.
And you mentioned that you started with graphite pencils, but you don't just work with pencils. So what are some of the other, I guess maybe like mixed media materials that you bring into your practice?
So I started with just those pencils, very small pencil case. Then I started adding in colored pencils. Then I started adding in like water-based pens, so Tombow pens or Ecoline pens. Now it's a bit out of hand. On my desk in front of me, I've got Posca markers, acrylic markers, water-based markers, pencils, neocolor crayons, soft pastels, gelatos, which are really hard to buy now. And that's the thing, that, you know, they're so hard to get hold of now that I'm too scared to use them, which is stupid. Like, I should just use them. I love gouache paint. And then I have a box next to me, which is just acrylic paints. And those I tend to use at the moment. If I'm using them in my sketchbooks, I use them on my jelly plate. So I roll them out and then print the jelly plate textures onto the paper. And then I'll work back over the top of those. And then I've just dipped my toe into oils, but it feels very scary. So I've come back out again. But nothing for me is off limit. I love mixed media. I love layering materials and seeing what happens. It's a lot of sort of what if, like, oh, what if I put a bit of acrylic ink in there? And what if I try this? And what if I put neocolor on top of that? what happens. It's that inquisitiveness, I think, that helps me keep going.
You work both at home, but also out on location. How do you decide what to bring on location?
My partner, Phil, his mom made me a rucksack, which is specifically will fit an A3 sketchbook in it. So it's massive. It's this huge rucksack, but I requested this massive rucksack. And it also means I can fill it full of stuff. Like, absolutely. I think sometimes, actually, it's not that clever to rock up on location with a rucksack full of stuff and a tote bag full of stuff and maybe, like, got more stuff back in the car just in case you need it. It's actually more clever to go out with five things, some paints, which you can mix your own colours, and then a couple of pencils. That's amazing. When I watch people do that or hear people have done that, I'm like, oh, wow, that's magic. And then for me, I take as much as I can carry. My first date with boyfriend Phil, my partner Phil, we went to this woodland, magical ancient woodland on Dartmoor, which is near where we live now. I was working on a book about trees and he said, oh, you should go see this woodlands. I know where it is. We can go. And I just thought it was a day out drawing. So I turned up on our first date with two tote bags full of art materials and a bag for him to be like, I bought you some art materials to try. Did not realize that it was meant to be probably quite a romantic date. And I turned up with like multiple bags of stuff and I can't quite stop myself. I think I panic and I think, oh, I might need that. I might need that. And I pack more and more and more. So no, I don't have a set bag of stuff. I would love to be one of those people that could just go out with a couple of things. And I would aspire to be one of those people, but it's not me.
What I love about these conversations is that they show that there is no one right way to do anything. There's like a right way for you. So there have been a bunch of limited material artists on the show, which is a great way to work, if that's the way that works for you. But what I love about what you're saying is like, no, I'm not a limited materials painter. And that's part of the joy for you.
Yeah. I will go out, so I'll take everything out with me, but then I might just use a handful of stuff. And what I really should do is then photograph those things or write them down and be like, I just used that, but I don't. I'm getting better. This year, I've actually started making notes on my drawings, which I really like doing. I just listened to your episode with John McDonald, and he was saying approaching it as a scientist. When a scientist is doing one of those experiments, and then if it goes wrong, they'll just collect that data and then do another experiment. You know, sometimes you hear someone say something and it's just like, wow, I could feel the weight lift off my shoulders of being like, yes, yeah, that's such a good way of thinking about it. And actually this year I've started making notes on my drawings. So I'm almost analyzing the drawings as I'm making something. So if I've made something, and even if it's out of location or it's back at home, I'll sort of write down, I liked this, this didn't go well, try this next time. Have you thought about doing this? Try this material next. Especially if I'm coming back the next day, I'll just write directly on the drawing or the painting. I loved what he said about that, because I think it really does make you then feel like you're a scientist.
When you're on location, you mentioned that when you come to a place, you don't necessarily just sit down and draw the first thing you see. So how do you actually decide, I'm going to work on this?
It's like a feeling. So it's really hard to describe. I'll sort of know the area I want to go to and I'll drive there or walk there. And then when I'm there, it's almost like I'll have a little wander around, I'll have a little look and see. And sometimes you can go to the most beautiful place and not feel it and be like, oh, I've come all the way here. I don't want to draw anything here. Like, what is it? And then maybe on the walk back to the car park, you'll see something people just walk straight past. The road where we live is being resurfaced. We drove back past all the tarmac lorries the other night. We came back quite late and they were parked under this street lamp and it was dark, but the way that the sky was, it was almost blue, really dark blue. And then this van was this yellowy colour and it had this street lamp almost perfectly over it. I said to Phil, that is what I want to draw. That is amazing. He was like, no one else would go past that and want to draw that. Don't often teach anymore in person at university, but I had a group of students I took out on Monday and I took them to do this panoramic view of Plymouth. And the thing I was most interested in is there was some builders taking down the building next door. And I was like, oh, I want to draw that. I'd like to draw the builders putting up scaffolding and removing parts of the building. And sometimes you just don't know what it's going to be that's going to really draw you. But I've also learned that you really could just plonk yourself down and draw anything. Sometimes it is just, it's about doing the drawing. It's not necessarily about the final thing for me. So I could sit here and draw this. And maybe, yeah, it wouldn't be the best drawing, but maybe I'd try a different combination of materials and think like, oh, that's cool. Or maybe the tonal value of something would, I'd think, oh, actually, that is perfect for another drawing that I'm working on. So sometimes it is about what I'm drawing. Like I want to draw that tarmac lorry. But also it's sometimes it's not about what's in front of me. It's about what I can learn from doing it. So almost it doesn't matter, which is brilliant because then you can just draw anywhere. So I've normally got a sketchbook in my bag at all times. And some sort of materials. There's normally, I've normally got tote bags with like odd stuff just floating around in the bottom of them, like pens, like paintbrushes. Yeah, sometimes no paint, just paintbrushes. But sometimes you get a really strong feeling and think like, yeah, I've got to paint that. And sometimes it's just like, well, there's nothing really in front of me that I want to draw, but I'm going to draw anyway, because you just don't know what's going to come from it.
You said that you used to work where you would just sit down and start the drawing like on the left and you'd move to the right. And now you do a little bit of compositional thinking before. How did that thinking evolve for you?
Yeah, so when I first started going out, I would work from the left and I would go across to the right and whatever happened kind of happened. Sometimes I'd miss the main focus. I wasn't really thinking about, I never thought about composition. And as a lecturer, it was something that used to come up as like, we should teach composition. And I was always like, not me, please, not me. Because I couldn't, my brain couldn't think in that way. I knew the basics, like the real basics, like rule of thirds, Fibonacci spiral, knew very basic stuff. And then I started to notice in my drawings that if I moved something very slightly to the one side, or if I made something bigger or smaller, I could actually start making narratives within paintings and drawings. If I use the sky, for example, I could, you know, the sky today is sort of quite a flat grey. But actually, if I started to use the marks in the sky to direct the eye, I could then start and I could make the tree be maybe a bit bigger. And then I could use maybe like part of the branches to direct the eye around and add in some like narrative elements to that. All of a sudden, it really started to excite me because it was bringing together my storytelling side, like my picture book illustration side, into composing these images. And I can't quite remember when it sort of clicked, but it was almost before. I was, I don't understand it. It's not sinking in. People could tell me stuff, but I just, my brain wasn't absorbing the information. And then it clicked and worked for me. And all of a sudden, I was like, ah, yeah, I know how to do that now. And I know how to make my images better because I can use parts of the image to tell a story. And even though there's no words, it is starting to form narratives. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is like a game changer, such a game changer.
It's amazing to me how learning evolves with us. Like the more we learn, the more we learn, but also it takes time.
It's only in the last sort of year and a half. So I was doing that in my sketchbooks. And then last year I started working outside my sketchbooks to make these more finished pieces. And I'm so much more considered now about where stuff is going on the page. I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, like that it's actually been really recently that that's clicked for me. I think people just assume, oh yeah, she must know about composition. She must use that. Because it feels like I should know. I should have known that. And even, I mean, I did a tone and value month with my patrons. And I realized that all my palettes I was putting together just didn't have a very strong contrast. And again, that's really embarrassing to admit that it's only November that's just gone. Was it now? Really recently, first recording now, that I figured that out. And I'm like, oh, should I be admitting that? Because I should know, should I have already been figured that out? But I mean, I got so far without figuring it out. And sometimes I think we feel like we have to know all these things to make the art, but actually I'm not embarrassed because I got that far without really thinking about it. And now my drawings are just getting better and better. My paintings are getting better and better because I'm able to apply that now.
I love it because what I think, again, we have this idea that we'll get to a point and we'll just know it all. But the truth is that we learn by doing, and that is just true forever. If someone is waiting to know everything before they begin, they'll be waiting forever because the truth is the work brings learning, and then it brings learning forever.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I think 2018 me had a goal, you know, when I do this, I will have made it. When I do this, I will have made it. But now I'm like, oh, it goes on forever. And that's really exciting. It doesn't feel scary. I think if I'd known that in 2018, maybe that would have been a bit scary. So, but if you're listening to this and you're right at the beginning, don't think of it as something scary. It's just, there's always something new to find out and there's always something new to learn. And it's when you're ready in that journey, creative journey. So I just don't think my brain was ready to think about composition because I was also trying to relearn like how to use color, how to use materials, how to layer mixed media. And perhaps there's someone in this who's done a different journey and has learned composition and tone and value, but is now learning about color and mixed media. So everyone's journey is different. Everyone's path is different. And if we learn stuff in different orders, it just means we make something different. And that's great because if we were all making the same thing, it'd be really boring. I don't want to put anyone off their creative journey and say, you know, it keeps going. You're always going to be learning. But that's it is exciting. It's not something scary. It's exciting.
When you're looking at a scene, how much do you have decided before you start? And how much do you sort of figure out while you're working?
I do an initial sketch, sort of putting something together. But then I'm sort of trying to teach myself now, is the sketch good or is the sketch bad? For my personal practice, is the sketch actually holding me back? Because what I'm finding that when I put the sketch down and then I put my color on top, I've lost the sketch, but I've got the color and I've got the shapes to make the composition. But my initial sketch is actually that line work, that really fast line work that I've put down is what I really love. So now I'm trying to figure out, okay, like I went to a live drawing class on Wednesday and I got there late, which I hate doing. And I sat down and I was all flustered and I did the initial sketch. Right, this is where I'm going to put the face here to get the shoulders in, to get the chair that they're sat on here. It was an all-day session, so we worked 10 till 3 on one pose, did this sketch. I looked at it and looked at the model and I was like, oh, that's pretty good, actually. And then I spent the rest of the day fighting, trying to get back to that sketch I did in the first 5 minutes. And I'm not bragging because that never happened. I mean, it's very rare that that happens. But I'm trying to figure out in my work, if I put a pencil sketch down, I'm always fighting to get back to that pencil sketch. I used to paint on canvas and then I went back to my sketchbooks again for a year and a half. And now I'm coming back to painting on board again. And I'm finding that now, okay, this is how I would work on paper. Is it the right way to be working on board to get the best out of my work? So yes, I do sketch. And yes, I do plan a little bit. I do thumbnails in my notebooks and then I forget to look at them and then I discover them months later and go, oh, that was nice. I should have made that as a painting. I'm still learning. I am still figuring it out. And I think I'm not scared about that because it's exciting. Like I get to figure that out. So yes and no. Yes, there is some planning and there is some thought. I can normally see images and they'll come to me as like, I'm going to make that. And then it's trying to figure out, okay, how do I put that together? So yeah, there's a bit of toing and throwing at the moment in my work. It's new for me, I suppose. I would normally sketch, but now I'm trying to figure out if that is the right thing to do for me.
You work in a sketchbook, but you're also have been transitioning to working outside of the sketchbook. But that path hasn't necessarily been a direct line. So could you talk to us about what some of that has been like for you?
So my friend Sandy Hester, who's been on the podcast, she said to me, your sketchbook work isn't what you put on canvas. And it's interesting because so the pandemic, it almost sits in the middle of this creative journey. 2018, I was going out drawing in my sketchbooks. 2019, I went out in my sketchbooks. End of 2019, I went to New Zealand for a month to see my brother who's living out there. 2020 for me was meant to be like a year of travel. I was going to go travel. I was going to take my sketchbooks. I was going to draw around and then I was going to bring all those drawings together and put them into books. That was my plan. Didn't happen. And I'd been painting these sort of abstract landscapes on paper. And I'd sort of started doing that in my sketchbooks when I'd been out on location. I'd been making these sort of like abstract marks. So then that felt very natural. So then I moved them onto paper. And then a friend of mine said, oh, if you put them on canvas or if you made them bigger again, you could frame them. You could have these in the gallery. Like people were being really complimentary about them. And I was like, okay. But going from paper to canvas then, I just didn't have the knowledge. I couldn't figure it out. But I could kind of transition those marks and make these sort of big abstract skies. And then I sort of was taking these tiny houses that I was seeing on the coast path and sort of putting them into these big abstract scenes. And it felt quite natural. But also I think if the pandemic hadn't happened, perhaps I would have taken those canvases out on location and painted directly onto them. So I would have maybe taken the landscape work I was doing on sketchbook, but do it on canvas on location. And I think if the pandemic hadn't happened, I can see quite clearly a path for me.
Right. So you had this plan, but what happened instead?
But instead, I worked inside and I developed these more abstract landscapes that I'd been doing on paper. And I almost used the work on paper to then influence the stuff on canvas. So it was going sketchbook where I'm making a few abstract marks and using quite limited colours and different colours than what I can see on location, to these abstract landscapes on paper, to developing them again to these sort of abstract landscapes on canvas. And those went into galleries. They sold really well. And then I went back to working my sketchbooks again, and I was sort of developing these picture book ideas because I was working with a publisher. And I was developing these drawings and ideas for drawings and like ways of drawing and experimenting in my sketchbook. And we had the Patreon started up. We were running like drawing workshops online. And then it was only probably about a year ago, I was like, oh, I might go back to painting again, sort of chatting to Sandy about it. And sort of she was like, well, what about taking your sketchbook work and putting it onto canvas? Do you think you could do that with like the new stuff you've been making? And I gave it a go and I was like, oh, I just can't. I can't do it. I don't like it. It doesn't feel like my sketchbooks.
It's so interesting to me how on a surface level, or even someone maybe earlier in their art practice, the idea of something like moving from a sketchbook to a canvas, like, yeah, it's different size, but other than that, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But in truth is, it is a really big change. And you have to kind of find the right way of working to make that change. So for you, how did you figure out how to go about doing that?
It's taken a year to kind of secretly behind the scenes, because I share so much on Patreon, but actually I was like, I think I need to do this for myself. Otherwise I'm going to be constantly second guessing what I'm sharing, what I'm not sharing. So I'm just going to secretly work on some stuff. And I had these wooden boards, I think they're plywood, cradled panel boards in my studio left over from when I was making abstracted landscapes. And I was like, oh, I'm going to try those. And what I like about them is they're so flat. And then if I prime them with some gesso, I can get quite a nice flat surface, then feels like I'm drawing in my sketchbook. So then I've been sort of sketching on those and then painting on those with acrylic and sort of adding in a little bit of mixed media as well. But my knowledge isn't strong enough to really just go for it. Like when I'm working on paper and when I'm working as an illustrator, using air quotes there, but when I'm working as an illustrator, I know that the work will be scanned and reproduced like as a book or as a print or as something. But I think there's a little bit of tentativeness as a painter that I want the work to survive. Like I don't want to accidentally layer the wrong thing and then it sort of fall apart. And I think that's kind of like a barrier for me, and that's where I'm at right now in this creative journey right now. That's where I'm at. So no one really knows I'm making this work. I'm making it for me, which feels really nice. And I've started very tentatively. I've shared a little bit with my patrons, which has been really nice, and I've sent some to Sandy. Phil's seen it and a few of my friends have seen it, but other than that, no one's really seen it. And actually there's something really nice about that. When I was working before and I was sort of showing at galleries, you'd get the feedback, you know, oh, that sold really well, or that sold really fast. Oh, someone's asked for something like this, similar, but their colour scheme's different. They would have bought it, but they had a different colour scheme or something. And I found myself being really pulled by that. I would make work based on that feedback. So now this is really nice because I've made work for me, no feedback. I feel very excited by it, but I know at some point I'm going to have to actually share it probably, and that's that's terrifying.
So if someone came to you and said, I want to get really good at art, what advice do you give them?
I spoke about this on Patreon last year because my mum said that to me. Me and my mum last year did a few online life drawing classes together. It's quite interesting sitting next to her because she's brilliant. The way she approaches drawing is so different for me, and I love watching her draw because she's not got any formal training. She only draws when we're together. So she'll go months without drawing and then she'll make something and I'm like, oh, that's really cool, but I would have never approached it like that. And she said to me, I want to be better at drawing. I said, what do you mean? Like, what does that mean? And she was like, I just want to be able to draw a portrait like Phil does. So my boyfriend does like very realistic pen and ink drawings. So she's going from this, she draws maybe like once or twice a year when we're together, maybe a little bit more. And her goal is to draw like Phil. And that's what she's looking at. She's looking at Phil's beautiful portraits that he makes. And she wants to make that jump. So what I did was sort of ask her, I prodded around a bit and asked questions. And I was like, well, what's the next step? Like, what's the little step of that? That's the big leap of what you want to be doing. But what's the little tiny steps to get there? That, for me, changed my way of working last year. Like I mentioned earlier, like working in a smaller sketchbook, then making it slightly bigger than on paper, now on board. I wanted to go from my little sketchbook to board, but I needed to make all those little steps in between. So my best advice is to, yeah, have that goal in mind. That's brilliant. Have the idea of what you want to make in mind. That's really good to have that. Break it down into really little manageable steps. So if you want to get better at art, if you want to get better at painting, if you want to get better at drawing, draw as much as you can. Pick up a paintbrush when you can, as much as you can. Listen to brilliant podcasts because they're full of good advice. I mean, I'm not sure about this one. Hopefully it is. Hopefully there's something in here that's useful. But find your favorite artists online and see if they're doing like YouTube videos or tutorials or Patreons or anything that you can find, and start to sort of slowly make that journey. But it is a journey, and it is sort of, think of it like little steps rather than big leaps is my best advice.
You can learn more about Emma Carlisle at her website, www.emmacarlisle.com, and on Instagram and Patreon. And we'll link to everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for being with us today, Emma.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for today's show, but there's more great conversation with Emma Carlisle in her extended cut bonus. In it, we talk trusting your gut, the power of working in your comfort zone, and why sometimes you really just need to keep that work private. That's available in the Podcast Art Club. Find links to it and everything else at learntopaintpodcast.com/podcast/episode96. Speaking of the Podcast Art Club, thank you to all of you inside the club supporting the show. You make this all possible. Extra shiny thank yous to High Gloss supporters, Andrew Atterbury, Debbie and Brian Miller, Rihanna DeRold, Janet Wheeler, Nancy Bryant, Pam Lyle, and Slow River Studio. Happy painting!